for January the 30th, 2015. We talk about the possible closure of Joystick, Brawlhalla, and we ask you if you're ready for VR. That's virtual reality. Welcome to the 91st level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meinsmith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Guys, we're on the march to 100.
Woohoo!
I know, right? They said it couldn't happen. They said, hey guys, your 100th episode was actually a couple weeks ago, and now old episodes are falling off of the feed, and why isn't Cole migrating all of that stuff to SoundCloud so that we get all the episodes back? You know what, guys? Life is hard sometimes.
Yeah, I think we need to act like we've been there before, because we did hit, what was it, 150 episodes exactly of Stand on the Don't Tree and Riddle Me This. So.
I think it was close to like 163
one for each Pokemon
or something like that. Yep.
Oh, okay. I know we did a Sesquicentennial.
Sesquicentennial, yes.
Sesquicentennial.
Yep.
Yeah, he guessed it.
100 Sasquatches. It's
never been seen before.
Yep. It's
what
a gross
I'm saying
of Sasquatches.
We did it before. We'll do it again.
Yeah. No, we just have to. You tear it up, we build it down. Yeah, let's see here. 167 is what we reached with Stand Under the Don't Tree and Riddle Me This. However,
listeners or episodes or both.
You know, it's funny because I've been doing like listener calculations to try and figure stuff out. Like if you would have asked me when, you know, not when we ended that, but like when we started the podcast run of DTR around episode 77 or so, mm-hmm. would you guys have X number of listeners? I don't want to share that number publicly, although you can probably surmise by looking at various things. You're like, no, that's crazy.
Actually, yeah, we are very fortunate. Thank you, everyone who does listen.
Yeah, yeah. So we're on our way to 100 listeners, 100 episodes. Each episode, we bring on a new listener.
There can only be one new listener per episode.
I know, right? It's a very. I wonder if that would be a strategy. Actually,
just start naming the episodes after people that we want to listen to the episode.
Okay. this is yours, Jeffrey.
We could do like the Gmail thing. Like, yeah, when you join, you can invite like three new people to listen to the episode.
Mm-hmm. So here's a scheme. I don't know how to do this without it involving money. But the idea would be you put out episode one, only one person can download it. You restrict that, and there it goes. Two people, three people. You'd have to iterate pretty rapidly. But I wonder if there's any value in exclusivity.
You know, you put out the episodes one word at a time as well.
Oh, yeah. So. Okay. Do like a choose your own adventure.
The admin is literally like 90% of the episode. Yeah.
Well, how is that too different from any of our other shows? Yeah, but I don't know. We don't know what we have planned for 100. It's gonna come upon us here pretty quick. If my projection is right, we're gonna hit episode 100 of this show around the time we hit episode 100 of Watch Out for Fireballs. So it's gonna be like a crazy little centennial.
Oh wow!
Season. Around the network. So,
and I'm pleased to now announce Duck Feed Fest 1 here in Cincinnati.
Damn it, Dennis, what are you doing to me? Do you know how many games I have to play? We're on double assignment duty. Yeah. Oh boy. So there's a little
what if for Duck Fest we just all crash at Cole's house and beat the video games he has on backlog.
Yeah.
Just legit
on turn. Just do it in shifts. Like, okay guys, the notebook's here, put it up on a plinth or something like that. As you have observations about the game, write them in a clear hand in the notebook.
Oh, see, I was figuring we'd do it like Idea Rush, you know, agile development. We just have sticky notes covering every wall of Cole's apartment.
No. No, that won't happen.
Some things are too serious to even joke about.
Yeah. So if you have any suggestions for what you would like to see in episode 100 of this particular show, feel free to let us know via the usual channels. There's a little thread up on the Facebook group as well.
Yeah, the post for level 90 has some good ideas.
But, you know, episode 100, that is in the future. Right now, we've got the usual retinue. We have the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And, yeah, let's proceed through those in an orderly fashion, starting with
the brief,
where we talk about news that might be happening in the video game world. I'm going to lead with the one that makes me kind of sad.
Sure.
Yeah, so apparently Joystick might be closing down.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, which is a real bummer. You know, everybody kind of has their own opinions about which video game news sources are worthwhile or not, but I think that Joystick did a really good job of having blog-style coverage without kind of being obnoxious about it. Sure. And they've kind of been my go-to site of choice for just idle blog checking on games. So what's crazy is, and you know, we're recording this on Tuesday the 27th, there may be more information about this on Friday when this episode comes out, so if we're outdated, please forgive us, is that Joystick is covering it like it's a rumor in the industry. So if you look at their article, it's filled with a bunch of, with like, it reads like any other article about a rumor. Like, at press time, Joystick employees didn't have any specifics. We cannot speculate on rumors or speculation or something like that. Like, just like that particular tone, which is like, wow, like they really did have a distinct editorial voice. This got kind of a lot of people moving around it. So like Save Joystick or something like that was trending on Twitter, and yeah, everybody is just kind of making appeals to AOL, which owns Joystick through an acquisition they made like in 2007 or something like that, of like Weblogs Inc. All the stuff having to do with like Arianna Huffington and stuff. Yeah, so it's a whole big thing. I'm trying to find the actual article and I don't see it. It's not.
Yeah, I'll post it. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Like you said, it's got kind of a tongue in cheek approach to it, mm-hmm. but it does say at one point, sources tell Joystick that the staff is aware of the closure, but corporate hasn't officially told them, so they're unable to acknowledge anything. Which, if that part is not a joke, that's really shitty.
Yeah.
Like having all that stuff get out before it's even official or before. Mm-hmm. You've even been officially told.
Right. Yeah. Officially from like AOL, like everything is coming down to like, oh, they're trying to close down non-profitable content sectors or something like that.
Like AOL.
Right. It just, okay, we had just enough grandparents die who still had subscriptions to AOL. Yeah.
See, am I the only one that hearing that Joystick, or rather that AOL bought Joystick, or really anything in 2007, kind of reminds me of, you know, the hearing about like, what Tupac, you know, releasing albums after he died.
I mean, on the surface of it, if you're just familiar with AOL from like AOL Instant Messenger logging in and sending people discs, yeah, sure. But like they've been, you know, viable / relevant, at least as recent as like, you know, 20, like they did a big rebranding in 2010.
Really? Yeah, I guess I missed that.
Yeah. Like they're not really an ISP anymore. They do have a startlingly non-trivial amount of business coming in from dial-up ISP. But
I guess that makes sense. Cause I mean, there still are places, you know, in the country that, you know, dial-up's probably a, you know, pretty big you know, part of the market.
Shamefully, yeah. And so that's the crazy part. We need to say, oh, AOL is a factor in this. I don't know, it kind of feels a little bit like a loss. I take it kind of not personally, but like listening to the Joystick podcast was one of the things that really informed the style of my shows. You know, sure. and you know the people who were involved there, your Justins and Griffins McElroy and your Ludwig Kietzmans and stuff, like that was kind of a big deal, and that was kind of a really early example outside of 1UP of getting some insight into the personalities of the people who are writing this stuff, and so you know knowing that this is kind of an institution that really valued that. That is kind of like going, you know, circling the drain is, it is a bummer. I'm going to stop talking now because I've just rambled on.
So I'm truly, you know, I'm not a business person. Like I don't have that background. It seems confusing to me. You know, I would assume Joystick would be profitable just because it seems like it's one of the major players in, you know, video game coverage. Can there be a situation where a company could be profitable but not profitable enough so you shut it down? I mean, it seems like as long as, you know, revenue's in the green, why would you ever shut it down?
That's the shitty part about being a public company, is it's not about how well you perform, it's about how well you perform versus expectations.
Yeah.
So expectations get set unreasonably high, and then you don't meet them because they're unreasonably high, and then unfortunately the hammer drops, which is shitty.
Yeah.
Huh.
And this could very well not be a case of, you know, Joystick being underperforming or costing them a bunch of money. Like they do have, you know, obviously salaries and stuff to pay, and there's a certain amount of overhead that's involved in, you know, serving up that content and stuff and pushing those ads. I think that it might be more of a strategy tax kind of thing. Which is, you know, even if on the balance sheet they're positive, it's somehow, you know, to somebody who is above, you know, the kind of the human level of this, saying that, like, why are we focused on video game journalism? I hear there's problems with ethics in that. No, no, like, why are we doing this? And so this is part of, like, a broader, you know, sweeping, like, let's simplify the line. Almost like, I don't know if Engadget is in trouble for this or not, but like it very well could just be that its existing is providing some kind of drag on different parts of the company, and this is kind of a measure that's being taken to appease, you know, some kind of stockholder. I don't know.
Yeah, but then you'd sell it to someone else versus shuttering it, so that it's weird.
Yeah, if it had any value, you could sell it for a certain multiplier of the cash flow, right? Just say, like, here's what this thing's worth. You get the name, you get the staff, you know, let's get this going.
See, I just figured, you know, after for many years, someone finally realized that they spelled joystick wrong.
Yeah.
Oh shit, you guys, we gotta get rid of this. This is embarrassing.
They're reopening as joystick. STIK. Oh no, not STIK. Shit. We have to close it again. I'm sorry, guys. You're all fired. we are just getting our lunch eaten on severance packages here. Jimmy, we told you, spell check.
I see your computer's on French, so you need to switch back from that. Yeah, I somehow got my computer like word processing set on French for a little bit, and I was like, "What the hell? Why is everything I spell wrong?"
was this at work? Was this a?
Yeah, it's just I like clicked a little. There's a little random menu in the bottom right or something like that. It's surprisingly easy to switch the spell check language, which is confusing to me.
Hmm. I would really though. If you switch to French, do you end up with, like, existentialist Clippy? Because that could be kind of entertaining.
Je m'appelle Clippy. Yeah. I don't know.
I think it is, you know, it speaks to the fact that gaming journalism is still a very supportive industry of its own. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of empathy for the people who are affected and a lot of offers of help in any way they can. And you know, it's good. You know, it feels like gaming is a community in that instance.
Yeah. Which is a little bit counter to like what you hear from people who try and break into it, which is like, oh, it's so clicky and, you know, really cutthroat. It's incredibly competitive on one hand, but then you get kind of the outpouring of at least nominal support when something bad like this happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, to be fair, those aren't necessarily mutually exclusive.
Oh, true, true. It's like, you know, a little bit of, well, you got a job in here once. Let's, you know, you're in. You know, your hand's already stamped.
Nobody punches my brother but me.
Yeah. I honestly, I don't follow any of this, like, or read any of the sites, like, often enough to know. Are there, like celebrity, like, writers for Joystick that, you know, would be, like, well-known writers that, you know, would be likely to go to a different thing and, you know, just kind of set up shop, or?
Yeah, they already left and started Polygon.
Yeah, but, like, you make that sound like a joke, but you're actually right.
No, that's, you know? it's sad, or it's sad because it's true. It's funny because it's true. Also sad because it's true.
Yeah. I mean, like, I would say, like, there are known personalities, but, you know, they're people whose followers are in the tens of thousands, not in the hundreds of thousands or millions. Like, you would say, you know, an According to Hoyle celebrity would have, right? So I'm looking at this here, and, you know, Justin McElroy, you know, incredibly popular writer, podcast personality. He has, like, you know, 37,000 followers, 38,000 followers on Twitter, right? So, yes, they're known, and yes, there are people who seek out those voices and will read a certain outlet, you know, because they're, you know, they're there, and because the work they do is good. But it's kind of hard to build a presence off of that. Like, I know that even, like, Polygon is still running on, like, venture funding. Like, I don't know that it's on its own two legs yet here two years later, something like that. Yeah, so I don't know. There's a hashtag around this, Save Joystick, and just the appeal is, like, hey, AOL, don't shut this thing down. There is goodwill, and that is something that, you know, is really hard to quantify as, like, a value behind a, dear God, I'm going to say this word unironically, and it pains me as, it's like pounding nails into my dick, guys, but there's value behind goodwill that comes with a brand.
So isn't that kind of the point of a brand?
Depends on who you ask.
Yes.
I'll say yes and we'll move on with it.
Yes. So yeah. I don't know. It's something that I care about. I like the people that write there still. I listen to their podcast. And yeah, I also saw it as a good place to get prompts and news stories for this show. So, but there are other sources. And that might be the problem.
There is one other source.
Oh, man. Who wants to go next?
So, proving that nothing is sacred, you are now able to take a selfie in World of Warcraft.
Boo!
Define that.
There is a, what is this, called a mod, I guess, a patch, an app, I don't know what you do in these things, a widget, a gadget, that is the this is the thing that gets me. It's called the selfie camera for World of Warcraft, but it's S.E.L. all capitalized, like it's a acronym, anagram, acronym.
Yeah,
it's like it's an acronym for something.
Yeah,
and I could not find anywhere what that is an acronym for in game. So I'm wondering if there's like some sort of in-game logic around why you can do this and what the purpose of it is.
Yeah.
But really, it's just so, you know, you can post selfies of your night elf self. So,
see, what's confused me is that's something you can just do in the game.
Yeah.
No, you can simply rotate the camera.
Oh, you totally can. However, the selfie angle is something that is entirely signature to that right there. The subtle foreshortening of the arm, the upward tilted angle of the head, you know.
And there are Instagram like filters on this, so you can make your World of Warcraft that much more douchey.
Yeah. So. When you lead with this saying nothing is sacred anymore, can you give me a little bit of insight into the reasoning behind that word choice?
I had one safe harbor in this life where I would not have to look at selfies, and it was in World of Warcraft. That's been destroyed now.
I've been looking at people, both the selfies and the photographs of people taking the selfies of people who were in car accidents. So,
well, this only leads to one conclusion, is that now that you have the World of Warcraft selfie, it will only be a matter of time until you have the World of Warcraft photobomb.
Well, I mean, it would be pretty easy to orchestrate it, I think.
Yeah, but I think knowing when someone is doing a World of Warcraft selfie and getting in front of it, I think is the real trick. Not coordinated with friends, but as in, like, just doing it organically, seeing it happening on the streets and being able to jump in.
Well, I mean, rogues in PvP are always sneaking up on people from behind, so. Sneak attack.
That's right. You get some sort of bonus to backstab while you're doing or backstab protection while you're doing a selfie.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, it's weird and out of place. I don't know that I take exception to it.
Yeah. It's, I guess, yeah.
Actually, in retrospect, it's one of those things that, like, obviously this is, kind of a Columbus's egg thing, but I'm a little bit surprised that Blizzard didn't do it already.
Okay, can you do me a favor? I could Google this, but I want you to explain to me what Columbus's egg is.
Well, it's the idea that Christopher Columbus was having breakfast with some people, and they were all talking discovering the new world, showing the Earth isn't flat, wherever, anyone could do that. That's easy. Anyone could do that. That's no big deal. And so Columbus challenged them to balance an egg up on its end, and they all proceeded to try, and no one could figure out how to do it. And so Columbus then proceeded to basically take the egg, wrap it on the table so that the bottom flattened, and it would sit there. Mm-hmm. with the point being that it's some Columbus's egg is something that is easy to do and straightforward once someone's done it and shows you how to do it.
Oh, okay. Hmm.
So it's like any mathematical proof?
Right. No. I said I did not say it's written in Moon Man language after someone does it.
See, I thought you were gonna go with it was him trying to prove that the Earth was spherical. It's like he knew that it was the equinox. So he's like, here you are. He set it down and it stood up, like, it turns out that he's like a prankster from the future.
I've come from the future to teach you that the world is not flat. Also to save you from the Terminator.
Right. Okay, we have a whole list here. Something crazy is going to happen in September of 2001. Might want to keep that in check. Just a whole list. Here's Biff's sports almanac. Yeah. Man, Columbus had the best of intentions. I don't know. So selfies. I'm surprised. So there are things like people look at Blizzard games with such with such reverence, but then they turn around and do something like this, and it reminds us all that Blizzard is WoW and a lot of these Blizzard games are basically just Borderlands, except with different skin.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about looking at them with reverence. This is the game that has an entire race based on pandas.
Yes.
So I don't think they take themselves too seriously.
Yeah.
I think it's also, World of Warcraft now, has become just incredibly ubiquitous. It's, I mean, it definitely is kind of a pop culture thing now.
Yeah, the word I was going to use was pop culture sewer.
I feel like
that's loaded with judgment. Yeah. Ben, so you got a story?
Well, I do, but I also want to append onto that story. I sent a link to GTA 5 selfies because that was a mechanic that was put in GTA as well.
Oh.
And so there's a whole bunch of those. And those are kind of interesting. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's good or bad.
It's just a thing. It's just a thing. There's a wonderful study that I read recently that, surprise, surprise, dudes who take selfies are narcissists. Even more so than women who take selfies.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, just the fact that there was a gender divide, I would, my suspicion would be that anybody who habitually takes selfies would be that, regardless of, you know, how they identified or whatever. But yeah, it turns out that rampant selfie taking is a sign of psychopathy, according to this one study.
Hmm.
Yeah. That I'm sure got funding specifically
narcissism
because...
Narcissism or psychopathy?
Either.
Or both.
Yes. Prevailing narcissism with a correlation or comorbidity with psychopathy.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Huh. GTA selfies. I see that. I want to also put a point here to say that the wasted GIF meme is one of my favorites. If I had to say I really enjoyed a particular meme, that would be one of somebody falling over limply, and then it goes slow motion in black and white and says wasted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, how's about a story?
Yeah, my actual story is a YouTube video. It's delivered via video. But it just talks about a patent that Namco made about 20 years ago. That's about up. Have you heard of this?
Oh, no. I think it's a different thing. No, go on. I'm excited. Okay.
The patent that they made was for video games in loading screens. Oh. And so I've seen a couple games do this, so I guess they must have been Namco games. I know there is one like racing game that you could play Pong in the loading screen. Mm-hmm. But apparently, since it's patented by Namco, no other companies can do that because, you know, patent infringement, whatever, that little thing. But so it'll be up, though, I think November of this year. And so other video game companies might be able to do more with video games by having additional content within the loading screens. So that could be cool.
Is that a design patent or is that a process patent? I always forget which one applies to software or.
I don't know.
Yeah. Huh. Because I know that they go up at different times. Yeah, we're running up on that, aren't we? Like to a time where like a whole shitload of patents that were done in like the early to mid 90s are gonna go away.
Yeah. It'd be kind of interesting to see how many of them, though, in the long run turn out to be relevant. Because I feel like, you know, on this one, you know, it seems like loading screens are kind of a thing that are going away. I mean, you know, not completely, obviously, but it seems like most, you know, when I play, you know, Far Cry or something, you know, there's no loading screens once the game actually starts up.
I'm sure there's a good feature in that, though, for like talking about the best video game loading screens. Like actually going through and doing a kind of a deep dive on how loading screens have evolved and added to the experience.
That's true.
I mean, like the your example I would say is Dark Souls, right? Take a shot. But the idea that this is a, you know, the primary way that you get the lore in that game is by reading item descriptions, and so combining the other thing that you do a lot, which is die. With this, that sounds like a cheap joke, but it's actually not.
I just want to know how they always time it out perfectly. So I'm like, you know, one sentence away from the end when it finishes loading, I can't finish reading it.
Well, in Dark Souls 2, that last one's always a question. So,
yeah.
I think I'd say worst loading screens definitely has to be, you know, Skyrim, because it's like, you know, not, you know, 95% chance of like interesting, you know, model and some flavor text, 10% or 5% chance of frost spider.
Yeah. It's playing Nordic roulette.
I like the image of the fact that Nordic roulette involves like if you lose, like all of a sudden a giant spider jumps out of nowhere and takes you down.
Yeah, that is like the spider cage is not the most the most lucrative or best selling computer peripheral. You know, they said no, it has to be lightning or a thunderbolt, can't be USB 3.0. That really limited the market share. Nordic Roulette, also the far less successful sequel/follow-up to the Nordic Track.
I was going to follow up with the name of my ska band.
Yep. I'm trying to branch out from that. You know, something like that. Yeah, this is something that was actually like a really big thing in like the mid to late 2000s, like as we were nearing the end of the PS2 generation and going to the 360 one. I remember like Tony Hawk's American Wasteland or one of the Tony Hawk's Underground, something like that. They advertised as not having any loading screens, but it turned out as you were going from area to area, you just had to go into this little smaller skate park and wait for the doors to open up.
I remember that.
Yeah, they Metroid primed it.
Huh. Or like the ever popular like elevator ride.
Oh yeah,
in Mass Effect. Yeah. Or in Portal. Yeah.
Huh. So that is crazy that that's going to go away, which means that we are only about 8 to 10 years away from the patent on sanity meters going away too.
That one can't go away fast enough.
That Nintendo has.
But guys, don't you know there's going to be a sequel to Eternal Darkness this year?
Yeah, just throw some money into this pit. David, you got a story?
I do not.
Attaboy.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for an exceptionally short multiplayer.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, if, hey, you know, I saw that it wasn't up, and by the time I went to put another one up, you'd already done it. So it's fine. It's cool. They've been getting kind of long. We are looking at other ways to do this. News on that forthcoming. Dennis, what's the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, well, first off, the way we're looking at doing it newly is you just have to come to one of our doors and give us the answer in person.
Yep, so Dennis's address is...
We also accept bricks thrown through windows.
Yeah. Just include the message with the brick.
The bigger the brick, the more you care.
I feel like that's an implied.
You get top billing for the biggest brick.
Yep. You get read first.
You guys, I would read the message on this millstone, but I can't lift it.
Yeah. Well, eventually the brick gets so big it makes more sense to throw the house at it.
I feel like that's fishing, getting into like adventure game logic there.
Oh my god.
Dennis, what's the question?
I asked how people are feeling about the way VR is shaping up, asking if they would get a headset for themselves now, or if they're not interested, what would it take to get them interested?
Yeah, I'll lead us off with David Petroco, who writes in saying, I think VR has made great strides in the past year and will probably consider getting one if I can actually play. I get motion sick, unfortunately easy, and get eye fatigue if I stare into a bright light in an otherwise dark conditions. I keep my screen brightness low on all my electronic devices to help combat this. I'll try before I buy, but if it's not PS3 at launch, expensive. Sorry, I'm going to restate that. I'll try before I buy, but if it's not PS3 at launch, expensive, and gets good support, I'm on board. I'd love a VR sword fight game if they had a way to reliably track my hand movements. Hmm. Yeah.
I think everyone wants to do a VR lightsaber battle.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Maybe
the motion sickness piece is tough.
Yeah. Well, like, so it becomes a bigger issue. Like when he says, like, oh, tracking hand movements, that is such a more complicated problem, I think. Tracking hand and body movements, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Because isn't that the thing that causes the motion sickness, at least when I played it, is the divorce from visually the game indicating that you are turning, but your actual like sense of proprioception and your ear cochlea and whatnot, not actually sensing any rotational movement of your body. So that disconnect is what makes you sick, right?
Right.
I think so, yeah.
I wonder if you'd get used to that over time, though.
Maybe,
because
but...
I mean, it seems like, you know, wouldn't that basically be the same thing as like when I'm, you know, playing a first person shooter on the in a game? Yeah,
I'm a person who suffers from a lot of like gastrointestinal distress.
Sure,
I have an incredibly nervous stomach, and as such, I really associate nausea with panic to the point where it's my life's mission really to not throw up. And so to hear, oh, you get used to it eventually, it sounds like a much more sinister version of this game gets better if you just get to hour 30.
Yeah. If you're willing to violently throw up for a couple weeks while you get used to it.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm not training to be a NASA dog.
Well, yeah, I mean more in terms of like, I don't know, I tended to get disoriented when I first started playing games. I wonder if it, you know, could potentially become something that eventually just no one thinks of. But yeah.
But I could definitely see, though,
it seems like from what I hear, there's a certain subset of the population that's fairly significant that just it doesn't work for.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, and that's a problem. And I kind of wonder if by the time this technology gets either scalable or, you know, they reach an economy of scale or they get it on point enough to where it's actually right, we will have aged out of the target demographic. It will just be those old dudes who played games by looking at something on their wall as opposed to, you know, jacking into their neural implants.
And then right. We can be even more curmudgeon-y than we are now.
Well, you know, we're just getting a head start. I just... Ben, what's Carlos say?
Carlos says, I play video games to have fun and escape, so a VR helmet would help these goals. However, I don't like being an early adopter, so I want my technology affordable and proven.
Fair enough. Heard that. I don't have anything to add on top of that. David, yeah, what's Alan say?
Alan says, I would need a killer game to come out that would bring the tech from the realms of Curio into being a device which saw a lot of developers cranking out games that made it a must-have addition when I was buying a current-gen console. Wow. Long sentence.
Yeah.
Does this qualify as a run-on sentence, though? Because it's one thought.
We should note that Alan said that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes. Alan said that. I'm not judging. Well... I'm not judging people's English in this situation.
Right. In general, you know, all bets are off. Yeah, that's a thing, right? Because I don't know, the closest analog that I have is like the DS, right?
The which?
The Nintendo DS, which
Yes.
I never really like two screens. That's really dumb. I would never. You know, I would never use that. You know, what's the thing? And then a bunch of stuff came out that necessarily required that bottom touchscreen, or you know, those two things. You know, working in the two screens working in harmony, right? That is like, oh, this actually is totally justified. Like, there needs to be a killer app, but the problem is, who's going to take that first step to do something? You know, beyond just, oh, now Minecraft works in Oculus. Right. Yeah. To actually say we have the guts to make this experience that is only on X, Y, or Z flavor of this hardware. Have fun. Go nuts.
Which, by the way, when did Minecraft become the standard to show off like a new platform? It's like whenever there's any kind of new platform or method of interaction, the standard by which we judge it is, well, how can you play Minecraft on it?
Because it speaks to the kids, you know, the youths.
Well, I think also kind of, you know, what we're talking about World of Warcraft recently, like Minecraft is also another game that's kind of just now a part of popular culture.
Yeah. I mean, it's reached like synonym status, like for a large swath of the population, especially like parents who would be buying this technology for kids and kids who might be excited about this. Minecraft might as well just be video games, and video games might as well just be Minecraft.
It's the Kleenex of video games.
Right. They've achieved either a synecdoche or a metonymy, and I always forget which one it is.
One is in New York.
Yeah. One is a pretty good, one is a really sad Charlie Kaufman movie. Oh man. And Dennis, round us out with Christopher Schleet.
Yeah, Chris says, this is something I'd probably wait a couple of generations for. I hope he means console generations, because you don't have that kind of time. I don't think you don't even have console generation time, because that's decades. But anyway, something I'd probably wait a couple of generations for, so I wound up having to pay for something top dollar that won't work as well as future generations. And it's not something I'd probably use all the time. I can imagine getting headaches from it. However, it would be fun to mess around with in short-term bursts. Might be thrilling to give myself... a crazy scare in a good horror adventure game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be terrifying.
Minecraft and horror games seem to be the purview of the Oculus Rift and company.
And that segues nicely into like my personal response, which is I would love to do an Amnesia game in this. Or, you know, it's like, oh, like take something that really does benefit from that level of immersion, strap it to your head so you can't easily get away, and then just, you know, let the good times roll. Right.
See, I'd be interested though to see if there is ever a breaking point to where you know, it's a significant portion of the population doesn't want to experience something that scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. You can only make it so scary and keep it viable.
Right, right. And you know, I don't know. Like horror movies do really well, but like at the box office, but it's still like a limited appeal.
That's an interesting concept, though. You know how, like, the Silent Hill games, they'll allow you to set the level of difficulty of the puzzles. Mm-hmm. And, like, if it's really easy, it basically gives you the answer. And then if it's really hard, it, like, has layers and layers of you know, symbolism and stuff on top of it.
So, okay, so what you're proposing is it's like the spice
a
scale.
Setting.
Yeah, a horror setting. Like, it's like when exactly. You go to the Indian restaurant, and it's like, oh, I'll take three. Give me three. That's pretty good. Yeah.
I want a four riddle and a two scary.
Yeah.
I could actually to a certain degree see some validity in that to the point where, like, for example, there's a lot of games I might play if I could turn off spiders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. And I could see situations where it's like, you know, like, hey, I don't like jump or like avoid that.
Yeah. But at that point, like, you might be swimming in the wrong pool, you know, especially because the majority of these horror games are like bespoke experiences. Like, they're not procedural.
On the lowest setting, Silent Hill 3 is just a regular theme park.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
man,
I know.
I don't know what was going on in that promo. Or all of these bunny plushies are like not blood spattered and pointing at me. Robbie the bunny, you're my best friend.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think part of this goes back to also, you know, your preferences. Like that's one of the reasons I enjoyed like Alan Wake, is because it generally was not big on jump scares.
But that's just like that game's execution of that thing, though.
Right. Oh, yeah. And what I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying necessarily tweak. I guess that's what I'm saying. Isn't that basically what a you know, scary slider would be tweaking execution?
Well, no, like tweaking execution would be playing a different game that didn't do the thing you didn't like.
Yeah.
I mean, just I think we might be overcomplicating it.
I'll to get us out of that, I'll say I'm interested in VR as kind of more of a driver for like event type experiences. Like, I think of it in the same vein of like laser tag. I want to go to somewhere that like has a whole space designed around something, and use the VR to immerse myself in that more so than I'd be interested in having it in my living room to play games.
Do like one of those sweet 8-way treadmills where they suspend you.
Something like that. Or just, I don't know if anyone has seen for the Super Bowl, Bud Light did like a life-size Pac-Man maze.
Mm-hmm.
Where you actually like ran around. It was really, really cool. And I kind of wondered if you strapped an Oculus Rift on someone and just took them to like a fixed third person perspective above the maze, like you do in actual Pac-Man, how long would it take you to get used to moving that way, seeing yourself in the third person? That could be just a really, really, one, it could be a really discombobulating and vomit-inducing experience, but like that would be really interesting to like, or, you know, you could strap a camera up over your shoulder and have like a life third person view for what? I don't know.
Oh, my God.
So for Amnesia, you would just take the person to the house on the rock?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. But just I'd be interested in
for Call of Duty. Would you actually shoot people? No.
No, but like nothing so much as that. But I know they've done demos of it where they like build a small set, and it's like, you know, you're actually just walking around kind of an empty stage, but in the VR headset, you're on a battlefield or walking through a castle or what have you. I can't see myself having it in my living room, yeah. But I could definitely see some really cool designed experiences using it.
Right. Like installation kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, I mean, that kind of has been around for a little while, at least at arcades. Not done really well, but like you go to a GameWorks and they have that one visor that comes down around your head, and it's like a little shooting game kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I was actually about to say there are examples of that done. To the new Star Wars cabinet has like a pretty much a panoramic view, or you know, fully surrounding you, which looks pretty cool, but. Yeah, I could see something like that. Only take it to the next level, where the entire like a laser tag place, where there's an entire arena designed around it. Do something like that with VR. That would interest me.
Yeah, David, how about you?
Yeah, I don't know. I like, on the whole, I like the idea. You know, and I like that people are at least trying new things. I think there's going to be a lot of technological hurdles that'll have to be jumped before, you know, this can actually become any sort of mainstream. The other thing I kind of wonder with, you know, sort of these things in general, in terms of like motion controls theoretically being the next big thing and VR being the next big thing, is that, you know, at some point, you know, video games are escapism. And at some point, if you make them, like, I'm probably not going to ever, you know, be interested in a motion control game because I don't have good manual dexterity. I play games so that I can play characters who do have good manual dexterity. So I feel like, you know, I think there's going to be a limited market for, like, you know, there's never going to be a, you know, VR, you know, Assassin's Creed game. Like Dennis is talking about, because most people can't do parkour.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, so I feel like there's, I feel like some of these ideas maybe overlook the fact that they're not really helping what makes video games relevant.
Yeah. Mm. Or differentiates them from other forms of media.
Right.
Yeah, at some point you want a certain amount of abstraction.
Right. Yes.
How about you?
That's a good way to.
I think it's cool. I think it has potential, but I think it's not like a one to one for current video games, where if you use that instead of a television screen, that it'll be like a much better experience. Like, I think they have to definitely pick a sort of experience that'll be better. So like the roller coaster demo that they do, like that seems like a good application of it. That would be completely boring if you were just watching it on a television screen. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. So, I mean, if you were able to do something like Mirror's Edge on with Oculus Rift, that would be awesome. You know? Yeah.
Oh man.
Bile bubble come up
again to the most people can't do parkour piece.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, like, it's not fair,
most people can't do first person fake parkour.
Yeah.
Well, but like it's crazy because, you know, it's functionally supposed to be 3D, right? Like you get some binocular vision happening in there. Like most people can't do real parkour, but it's not asking you to like jump from rooftop to rooftop with a VR helmet on. That's crazy. However, I could actually see that benefiting it because it would require, like, it would give you an added awareness of the spatial dimensions of a place. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
I have a tremendous amount of trouble like navigating first person spaces. I think a lot of people share this, you know, this trait, even if they're not willing to talk about it. But having some kind of like 3D on top of it, or like tying it to a little bit of like your body's sense of where it is in space a little bit, even if it is just like looking left or looking right, would actually make it a lot more easy to navigate some of these spaces. If you can make VR Mirror's Edge not make you want to throw up, you know, playing it, you know, sitting in a swivel chair with a wireless controller and a headset on, like, would probably actually work pretty well.
If only there were a way to do like some sort of 3D TV where you didn't have to have the 30-pound thing strapped to your head, but you still got that 3D help to understand where you were.
I think it's even different than that, because like a 3D TV is just a window that has some depth to it, as opposed to something that encompasses you and responds to like the your actual movements of your head.
Yeah. So projector video games, like in Her?
Exactly. Yeah. I'll tell you what, one thing that scares me about this, and just like even with Microsoft's like Live Glass or whatever the thing is, I couldn't even be bothered to learn its name or look at a great deal about its execution.
They're all you just, need like, to know is you can play Minecraft on it.
Cool. It just seems to me like there are too many different kinds, right? Like,
what do you mean?
I mean, too many different brands. Of VR technology. You have Oculus, you have Sony's solution, you have Microsoft's, you know, system now. Like, what this is bringing up is this other form of like a format war that even extends beyond like which system do you own. And like what we're seeing is a creation of these little fiefdoms that either requires developers to develop for all of them and account for all of their, you know, various, you know, differences between them, or forcing people to choose and locking themselves out of large swaths of the market. Like, if I buy an Oculus, what is that thing going to work with? Because I can be pretty well assured that Sony's one may not play nice with everything else. Like, all of a sudden you get into this weird little exclusivity thing that, you know, forget whether or not the technology works. It's a confusing market. And like, as somebody who's trying to make a decision of which $300 thing I want to strap to my fucking face, like, I don't... Like the only solution, like my gut tells me, just don't play.
So yeah, here's how it could be simplified. Half-Life 3 has it, and it's in the shape of a head crab.
Yeah. Yep, and you bite down on the proboscis, and that is how you reload.
Although I will say, Sony has a pretty good history of winning those format wars, so.
Kinda, but like Blu-ray isn't really Sony's thing. Like that was Philips, I think.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, like,
be fair, was DVD either?
DVD was Philips too, actually. Right. Yeah, or no?
You know, it strikes me as also interesting that it seems like the way a lot of consumers are talking about it, including some of the people that responded to ours. Is the kind of the assumption that it would basically be like buying a TV, where it's not, you know, any TV will work with, you know, your cable. It's just, you know, which TV do I want?
Yeah.
And I feel like that would be the ideal situation, what would make this most likely to work, maybe the only way this would work. But I feel like it's also incredibly unlikely to have that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just like but you would want to make it, you know, some kind of like universality. I could totally see like, oh, you know, they show the same things, but like I would prefer a Panasonic TV to a, you know, to a Samsung, right? Something
exactly.
Like that. I know what those do. Turns out Panasonic was the one that developed the DVD. So, yeah. Philips. There we go. It was Philips. Philips, Panasonic, Sony, and Toshiba. And it's a very
all
similar.
Four of them developed it.
Yeah, it's a very similar story for the Blu-ray. They all united under the Blu-ray consortium.
I don't know what to believe anymore.
Oh well, but yeah, it is a weird confluence of engineering, business, and development problems. To like make this ever happen. But yeah, that's all the responses.
Yeah, a brief multiplayer.
So keep your eyes peeled on facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Thank you everybody who responded here. If you got yours in late and we didn't read it, I'm so terribly sorry. But sometimes that's what happens. I still appreciate your writing in.
You can send your hate mail the same way you can send your responses, which has come personally to my house.
Yep. Throw my house at a rock.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we've been playing over the past week or so. Dennis, since you were not here last week, I'm going to ask you to avail yourself of this segment.
Happy to. I've been playing two games the past 2 weeks, I guess. The first one is The Swapper. The Swapper. Sorry, I had to do it.
No, you didn't. you could have stopped that.
No, I
you didn't have to, but we are better for it.
Look at what you've done.
Yeah, so I've had that echoing through my head the entire time I've played it, and it's a really solid little puzzle game. So I think most people are probably familiar, but the mechanic of it is that you can create a clone of yourself. I think you can have up to four on the screen at a time that will behave exactly as your main character, and you're able to switch your consciousness between all the different clones, and you know, any of the clones can die as long as your consciousness isn't inside it, and you use that to solve puzzles and progress through the game. And it's a pretty nifty little puzzle game. I've liked it so far from a difficulty standpoint. I've never been completely stuck in area, but I feel like it's challenged me, and that's a hard curve to nail. To really stay engaging and tough and making you think without completely stymieing you at any given point. Hmm. It's also surprisingly non-linear.
For being a puzzle platformer?
Yeah, for being a puzzle platformer. Just, you know, there's some gating in that you have to collect a certain number of orbs from puzzles to get into a new area. But there are what I think are significant areas that I just haven't even explored because I've kind of stayed on the critical path. Mm-hmm. More or less. And with that, it kind of enhances the hallmark of a really great puzzle game, which is the sense of I'm not sure if I'm doing it the way the developers intended. Mm. And this, you know, this happened to me in Portal all the time, and Quantum Conundrum all the time, and in every puzzle game that I've really enjoyed, I consider it essential. Just that feeling of, you know, I might be breaking the game right now. I'm not sure. It's working. So maybe not, but that's so weird and off, you know, outside the box that I can't imagine that they meant for me to do that. And it's just a really good feeling that has been popping up in the Swapper, very consistently, which has pleased me.
Yeah. The Popper Swapper. So this is a game whose narrative, or at least conceit, kind of center, you know, seems to be around, like, if you make all of these copies of you that you send to death, who is the real you, and kind of what are the ethics of that?
Have you played it?
No, this is just a thing that I've heard about it. I don't know if it gets to be that, but like people kind of lead with this having, you know, the kind of that emphasis. And so my question was going to be, if they do that, does it fall into the sometimes you die, think about it kind of trap, which is like games trivializing death?
I actually was gonna call that out because I'd heard the exact same thing and was very pleasantly surprised that it doesn't do that, at least to the point that I've played at all. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't expecting the, like, oh yeah, you're killing yous, but which you is the real you, and think about it, and you know, all that stuff. And it, just because you're creating clones of yourself, there are elements of that, but that is not at all the focus of the plot. And it actually has much more interesting things to say than I was expecting. So it focuses a lot more on kind of the nature of thought versus physical space. 'Cause basically you're dealing with an alien intelligence that exists only as thought, basically sentient rocks that have no concept of the physical world. They just have thought that connects them, and the way that interacts with humans is kind of the central driving force of the plot. And so that's a lot more interesting. And maybe I'm not selling it well enough, but that's a lot more interesting than the, oh, are you killing yourself or are you killing yourself kind of navel gazing stuff that we've seen.
Yeah.
So yeah, I went in totally expecting that, and it's thankfully something a little bit more interesting than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So that one's good.
I'm curious about it. Was that a PSN?
Drop? Yeah, it's a PlayStation Plus game, so you should, if you've still got that, be able to play it.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, highly recommend. I think it's also got something cool with the art style where instead of your standard animation, it's all like actual claymation objects that they photographed and brought in.
It's meant to look a bit like diorama kind of thing, like stop motion a little bit, right?
Yeah. I was really weirded out by it. The very first scene in the game, there's a spaceship crash, and it looked to me like part of the spaceship was very obviously made out of a tin can, to the point where I was like, oh, the aesthetic is going to be, it's like, you know, everyday objects. I'll just be able to notice if I'm looking for them.
Like Little Big Planet.
A little bit like Little Big Planet. But that's the only time I noticed something like that.
Hmm.
And so I wonder if that's like, you know, they were just out of time and did the cutscenes last, or
like a David Bowie reference, or
maybe
out here sitting in a tin can. Yeah.
It was just budget cuts for, you know, future NASA. thanks, future Obama.
But that actually could very well be it. I'd have to go back and play it again and look at it again, knowing that the rest of the game isn't like that, to decide whether it's just my expectations playing tricks on me.
Yeah, but
good stuff. I'll continue playing it and hopefully get to the end, because the story, like I said, it's interesting and has managed to intrigue me. So we'll see how it plays out.
I really want The Witness to come out. Just release it. I don't care if it's done. I just want to play it.
I don't know. I care if it's done. Okay, I think you should hold off.
Okay, I care if it's done. That's fine, I guess. But I just any one of these puzzle games, like the Talos Principle, right? Like that's out, and I'm ashamed of myself for saying, oh, $40, that's too much for me to put into this. But when I know I'm not going to play it right away, it's like, okay, doesn't make any sense. But just even looking at footage of the Talos Principle or hearing people talk about it, I just want to play The Witness, doc. And there's no release date. I'm just impatient. I don't know.
It looks good. And again, it's that kind of open world puzzler. I don't know if we're seeing more and more of those for a reason. But I really like that conceit of, hey, it's not just level after level of solve this puzzle as we hand them to you, but you really have a little bit more freedom to explore than all that.
Yeah. Like, basically what I want is a pattern matching version of what Riven did, which is, here is a whole big series of islands that you're going around on. And yeah, you're kind of solving a little, like a couple of puzzles, but really there are only two major ones that span the entirety of this game world. Like, have fun. And when you realize that all that comes together, that is one of the most satisfying things in gaming. And just, this is like outside of like Abduction or whatever Cyan is doing now. Like this feels like the best chance to like get some of that again.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but now I'm just talking about puzzlers in general. What was your second game?
Second game was Resogun, the game by Housemarque for PS4. And surprisingly, for PS3 and PS Vita, they kind of announced a while back that they were going to port it to earlier generations, and then it just kind of came out, and no one thought anything of it. But because Resogun PS4 was a free PS Plus game, the PS Vita and PS3 versions were free for me as well.
Yes.
The interesting thing is that when I downloaded it, I didn't get the standard notification that, hey, this is a PlayStation Plus game, you'll only have access while you're a member, blah, 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 blah. Like, usually that pops up for every game that you download. And this was just like, hey, it's free, download it. So I'm wondering if there was some sort of, like, weird glitch in the coding, or I don't know what.
Yeah.
That this now, like, even if I canceled my PlayStation Plus membership, I would still have access to it. I'm not going to try that.
This, of course, implies there's a scenario where you wouldn't have PlayStation Plus.
Right. Yeah,
basically, those hooks are in too deep.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's definitely a Housemarque game. You're controlling a little ship and shooting massive amounts of enemies.
Yeah. Nice. Housemarque, for people who don't know, they're the developers behind Super Stardust HD and Super Stardust Delta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sad to say, I think that not only do I like the Super Stardust games better, but they come off as more next gen to me than Resogun does. Like, Resogun is a perfectly competent game. It satisfies that little, you know, bullet hell shooter itch very well. But on almost all counts, I liked Super Stardust HD better.
We talked about this before, right? Like, we've covered Resogun. So one of you has played this, right?
Was it last week, maybe? And I didn't hear about it?
No. Just for some reason...
I've not.
Like, looking at this is kind of tripping off my, like, oh, have we covered this ground before? Because, like, it just looks like visually busy Defender.
Yeah, essentially. That is what it is. I can't remember talking about it before, and I know I haven't played it before.
No.
The fun little hitch in this game is, you know, so it takes place on a cylinder. You're basically on the outside edge of a cylinder. And so, you know, everything's a big circle. And the main way you get points in the game is to rescue humans, which are trapped in their little cages, and destroying certain sets of enemies will open up a human cage. But the human is not necessarily anywhere near the set of enemies that you destroy to open the cage. So it's a nice little bit of chaos to have this human freed and then need to just completely throw yourself to the other side of the cylinder, not really knowing what's over there or what you're going to have to deal with to you know, grab them and save them before they're killed. So that's a nice little... twist to the genre, and I can appreciate that. But with Super Stardust, it was, you know, you were on a sphere, so we've added an extra dimension there. And there was a lot more physics going on with, in this one, you just shoot enemies and they pop. There's no, you know, they're on a set path, and you need to either avoid that path or shoot them before their path crosses yours. Whereas Super Stardust was, you were in an asteroid field with what felt like at least hundreds of asteroids at a time, and your shots would knock them around and cause them to bounce into one another, and it was just all complete chaos. So I never want to criticize someone for making the game that they want to make and having it be, you know, a good game and accomplish exactly what they set out to do, because I think they did it with that with Resogun, and it's enjoyable. But in the press that I'd seen, it was like, oh yeah, so beautiful, you know, next gen XYZ. And it just, it feels like a step backwards from Stardust versus a step forwards.
I mean, do you think that has something to do with the switch to strictly side scrolling as opposed to kind of the top down approach that Super Stardust took?
Maybe. I think, and again, maybe it's just because I'm playing on the PS3 or in my Vita, and I would be totally blown away by the graphics if I played on PS4. But that's one, that's not the point of the game. And then two, all of that, all the, like, you know, crazy graphical stuff is kind of happening in the background. Like, you're flying around a cylinder in front of a city, right, essentially. So there's a lot of detail in the background there, whereas in Stardust, all the detail was in the foreground because there were zillions of asteroids coming at you. So it felt like the detail and the amount of stuff going on was much more a part of the game in Stardust, whereas it feels a little more like window dressing in Retrograde. Again, I feel bad because it's a fun game. It accomplishes what it sets out to do, I think, fairly well. It just it feels like a step backwards.
Yeah, just didn't land.
Yeah. So that's what I've been messing around with these 2 weeks.
I gotcha. How about you, Ben?
I have just been continuing playing Dragon Age.
It's a long-ass game.
It is. I looked up how far I was, and I am literally like a mission or two away from the end the main story. So I have been making progress despite having talked about this game for like the last 2 or 3 months. So I'm near the end. I've gotten to the romancing section of the game where you could romance any of your party members. Mm-hmm. I've also gotten to the point of the game where I realized that I could have gotten my character's secondary class, but just straight up did not do that.
You've been waiting for that one too, right?
Well, yeah, I didn't realize that these like missions were unlocked to go do that. And so I was going through like my journal entries and I was like, oh, I see. I can go do that now. So that kind of makes me want to play the game again. But whatever, you know. Yeah. It's fine enough. So that's my faint praise for the week.
But faint praise of the week. Yeah.
It's good.
It's kind of bizarre that you had to check to see if you were nearing the end or not. Because like
you just don't know.
is that because there's a lot of kind of climaxes that all, you know, it's a bunch of mini story arcs that any one of them you could say, well, this could bring it to the end, but they give you a MacGuffin to keep going? Or is it just because it's all kind of blending together?
Yeah, I mean, you could kind of compare it to the Mass Effect games where it's like they'll telegraph this like huge mission that you need to prepare up for, this like huge task that you have to do, like save the galaxy or whatever. In this case, it's like, you know, kill this one bad person and save all of the world that you're in. But it's like you just don't know when you're going to do that. And there's always just some point where, you know, some triggering event happens and then you're at the end of the game. Huh. But yeah, so I guess I am before that moment, though. So
yeah, because like I remember in Dragon Age 1, they actually had like, you know, you need to sway these five kingdoms or whatever, these five peoples to join your cause. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you were just kind of taking the, you know, going down the list. And then there was like one big event that led to kind of the final chapter. It was roughly similar in Dragon Age 2, except that was more of a linear kind of thing. But like you would expect like a really good story to have an arc that would feel like, okay, we're kind of coming in for the landing here.
Yeah. Maybe I'm missing it. Like right. I missed the missions for the, but I don't know. I haven't noticed it yet. I mean, all the main branch story missions are pretty solid as far as like, they're a lot better than the side missions, I would say, as far as content. You know, it's very, you know, a very dense experience and pretty rewarding. But yeah, but there's only, I'd say, maybe a handful of those, like 10 or 12 of those throughout the game. So.
Yeah. Yep, so I imagine that you're going to have final thoughts next week.
Yep, cool. Just in time to get new games that are coming out, because there's a whole bunch of new games coming out in the next couple of weeks.
True that.
Ooh, what's on your radar?
So I know Dying Light came out today, I believe, right?
Yep.
And then The Order 18-something-something-something.
Yes.
Is coming out in 2 weeks, and then or 3 weeks, and then Evolve is coming out in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Somewhere thereabouts.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So you got your dance card is full.
Perhaps, yeah. Yeah.
Although so far I'm really kind of being disappointed about the reviews for Dying Light.
Yeah, I heard that they had not even released reviews for it, or like official game reviews yet. But
right. Yeah, well, because they released the actual copies of the game to reviewers just like 12 hours before it was officially released.
Yeah,
I think that's just the way the world is now.
Yeah, well, it's more though, what I was reading was most people were saying basically that it kind of had the Far Cry 4 thing where the storyline is basically generic and your character has no personality.
But I mean, that's also a little bit of the Dead Island problem too, right?
I think that's the problem though. Like, I feel like at least for me, what these reviews needed to accomplish is convince me this isn't Dead Island.
Yeah. Except this time it's Dead Islands, but you're on rooftops this time, I guess.
Dead rooftops.
Yep. Dead roof. David.
Sure, I'm actually kind of excited. Jala was at PAX this last week, and got a whole bunch of beta codes for Brawlhalla. Have any of you guys seen this at all?
I've seen you guys playing it.
Yeah, it's basically indie Super Smash Bros.
It's called Brawlhalla.
Brawlhalla. Yes. I heard Brohalla, and I was like, oh, man.
Well, maybe a little. No. So it's, you know, the same, you know, 2D fighting game, same setup as Super Smash Bros. So, like, you kill people by, you know, knocking them off the stage, and then, you know, as they take more damage, they get easier to knock around, that, you know, that sort of approach to gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of its setting is a bit, well, I mean, I guess by definition, a bit more generic because they, you know, can't draw on, you know, Nintendo's cast of characters. So it's sort of, you know, sort of seems like it's trying to do just kind of like each character being a, you know, a common like fictional archetype. So there's, you know, a Viking and a, there's a steampunk person, a cyberpunk person, a knight, you know those sorts of things, cowboy. So the other thing that's kind of interesting about it, and that I actually really like, but I can't quite explain why, is kind of the flow of the game is you start out unarmed, and one of the main items that drops is weapons. And so when you pick that up, you each character has two weapons, so you randomly get one of those weapons. And so then your entire moveset changes. So basically you have a unarmed moveset, a first weapon moveset, and a second weapon moveset. But what I kind of like, but I can't exactly figure out why, is the weapons are generally shared between characters. So, you know, there might be three or four characters that one of their weapons is a sword, and the moveset will basically be the same for all characters that have sword as their one of their weapons. Mm-hmm. So I know it's just, you know, sort of interesting. It feels a little bit kind of more sporty in terms of, you know, more like, less like you're playing just some, you know, off the wall character in Smash Bros, and more almost like, you know, say like playing a position in a sport, if that makes sense.
I mean, is there team?
There are team modes, and but I mean more in terms of like, it seems like it's much more designed around like each weapon seems, you know, very much has like, this is what, you know, this weapon's gimmick is, or, you know, kind of what its, you know, thing it does is. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like it's kind of designed around more, you picking a character is more about, you know, what two gimmicks do I want my character to have?
Right.
So, like, the two ones there's a couple that are kind of cool. The hammer, kind of its big thing is basically when you hit someone, it sort of grabs onto them, and so, like, will, like, fling them into the ground, or so it's really good at, like, picking people out of the air. Mm-hmm. Similarly, one of the weapons is a rocket-powered spear. That is, you know, very powerful, but all of the moves, you know, have basically a non-cancelable and move you around a lot, so it's real easy to get into bad situations. Mm-hmm. And then similarly kind of interesting is the handgun weapon is not a ranged weapon. Even though it's ostensibly a gun, it'll still only hit someone a yard or two in front of you.
You pistol whip them? Like, isn't it just a shitty club at that point?
No, you're actually shooting. It's just, you know, it's...
So it might as well not be a gun.
I mean, it's... You know, it's one of those things where, like, I mean, you can make the argument that, you know, any of the weapons, you know, all of them could be, you know, sword, you know.
But the,
you know, spear could just be a sword that I'm stabbing people with.
But the thing
really,
is,
if you think about it, a spear is a type of sword, just with a really long hilt.
Yeah, it's a really dull sword on the sides. Yeah.
No, I would say it's a thing where, I think the guns thing, you know,
it seems like there is a far less confusing way to theme that, to communicate exactly, you know, like what exactly it does. There has to be a better fit.
Like, see, it could be like a whip or something like that. The way the gun ends up playing is, one, since, you know, when you're in the air and doing attacks, they're much more directional than a lot of the other attacks, because you can, you know, you know, it's amid to, you know, you shooting down at an angle or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I would say the other thing is kind of its big, its gimmick is it's the pretty much all the other weapons, if any attack that, like, covers a fairly large distance, you actually travel that distance, whereas the gun doesn't really so much cover more distance or, you know, have a farther range. It's just you don't actually have to move to attack in that range. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I just this whole thing sounds incredibly complicated to me.
It's actually not, though. Like, it's actually, I would say, like, much simpler than Smash Bros.
See, but, like, Smash Brothers, like, there are the differences between characters, but that's pretty much just about it. Like, items are just kind of these consumable things. So, like, something that's great about Smash Brothers is that, like, you can pick a character that you kind of like, and everybody's, you know, move that is mapped to a particular button kind of, you know, functions the same. This kind of sounds to me like, you know, without having played it and just kind of going off of your description and stuff that I'm looking at, it feels like it's like one degree of like customizability or variation too far in terms of making this like an order of magnitude less approachable.
Sure. I would say, I think the two things that I think kind of mitigate that some is, one, the move sets are very simple. So you a heavy attack and a large and a strong attack, and you can press in one of the either not be pressing anything or be pressing in any of the cardinal directions. But there's no difference in moves in terms of like entering button presses in, you know, a different order or a different, you know, rhythm or anything like that. So the move sets are very simple. And then the other thing I'd say is, you know, the actual, in terms of getting different weapons, it's much more about, you know, trying to being at an advantage when you're disarmed and trying to keep your opponent from getting armed, as opposed to it is, you know, it being like a consumable that you're constantly switching. So, like, generally, once you grab a weapon, you'll then have that weapon until you die. So, but
is it easy to follow the action on the screen?
I don't think too bad. You know, sometime, you know, it's definitely all your characters are basically human, so there is a little bit of difference in terms of, you know, it can be harder to follow compared to, say, like, you know, Super Smash Bros., where, say, like, Kirby looks nothing like Samus.
Yeah, like, from a design standpoint, they all have different silhouettes. So it's actually really easy to, like, if you're not doing 8v8 or whatever,
right,
or 8-player Smash, your eye kind of goes to, you know, whoever has the cookie-cutter outline that you recognize.
I would say it's... I don't notice it being too hard to actually track, like, the screen being too busy or anything, but it is harder to track, you know, which character is which. And I would say that's particularly the case if two people elect to use a similar color palette, because you can switch out, you know, your colors for your characters.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Yeah, so. That sounds really bad.
Yeah, I mean, just like to an extent, it kind of sounds like they are making being able to parse the visual information part of the game too, and just like that, just that kind of sounds like another barrier. Again, I'm casting judgment on this without having played it. But.
I know. To be fair, I think it's much, much, much more approachable than like Super Smash Bros. I think overall, I'd say it's very approachable. I think mainly just because, you know, it's significantly more simple.
Hmm. What platform can you play it on?
Right now, I think it's just on Steam.
Okay.
So.
Cool. I don't know that I have any other questions about it.
Sure.
Yeah. And I really don't have a game to talk about. Something is happening with my Steam homepage where it keeps on recommending in my carousel anime, like, not just visual novels, because I like those, but, like, very prominent pictures of sexily clad anime ladies. And I don't know what Steam is trying to say about
it. You play one
to be
princess
fair,
queen
that's
saving
also
game.
Happening in mine.
Yeah, it's like Sakura Angels and, like, just completely inscrutable titles of, like, the name, the one thing you must not forget. What?
I think it's also a bad, probably a bad sign when you hover over it and one of the top user tags is porn.
Well, I mean, at least the system works. They're trying to inform you of what that is. But yeah, sorry, right. I'm just looking at this here. Today I did play a little bit of the Grim Fandango re-release.
Oh, nice! What did you play it on?
I played it on PC.
Okay, that's why it worked for you. Yeah, apparently people have been having trouble on PS4.
Oh. Yeah, I've been doing PC and Mac is what I've been playing it on. Really, I just played a little bit into the first chapter. Not a whole lot. I was just kind of curious. Like, I have enough goodwill towards that game to be like, okay, $15 just to be able to always have this in my Steam library and not have to worry about getting the, getting the discs that I have that I bought in, like, 2002 to run on some kind of modern machine. Like, yeah. And so an exercise of playing it, this game that I know really well, it's hard for me to speak to, like, you know, whether or not this is going to be good. Like, it very much is outmoded. It is a fantastic story that has some bullshit adventure stuff get in the way, and it really depends on your tolerance for those adventure game puzzles, which it's very hard for me to look at in a modern context just because I so thoroughly know what to do that it's like, yeah, I could see how that would be frustrating, but I just kind of play it for the story. In this regard, I really have to focus on the quality of the remake, like of the updating that they did for it. And it's weird because, like, it runs perfectly, which is a feat, you know, in any stretch. Like, there have been whole communities dedicated to trying to build an emulator that'll run this whack-ass engine that they made for it, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like it is, you know, widely pirated. That was actually part of the marketing. Like, when they revealed this, you know, it was like somebody writing a letter to Tim Schafer about how sad it is that everybody has to pirate this game, right? And in a lot of ways, this is like a legal and business triumph, in addition to, you know, like an engineering one to get this even, you know, even to run, like what they had to do to get these rights from the flaming husk of LucasArts away from these people who, like, these other parties who haven't been identified, who are also eyeing this with interest, right? So, like, Double Fine getting the rights back to it. And so it's incredibly faithful in a lot of ways. Like, they didn't, you know, resample or redo any of the backgrounds. This is like a Resident Evil where they have pre-rendered scenes that you have polygonal characters walking around. It's still presented in a 4x3 with kind of like some curtains on either side of it, which fits with the noir presentation, right? So, like, it still looks like an older movie a little bit. It also gets a little bit crazy, you know, because they didn't resample or re-render or upscale those for, you know, a high def screen. What you have is these really crisp 3D models of, like, Manny Calavera, you know, with updated textures on those, you know, like, you can actually see, like, oh, there are the pinstripes in his suit or whatever, against these really kind of muddy background images. Which, on one hand, it's like, why are you upset? This is, you know, not really an HD remake. It's kind of an updating, you know, like, from a preservation standpoint, that's fine. But also, they completely re-recorded all the music too, which I don't know what the deal with that is. Like, it sounds right. I know some people are upset that they did that because the original music was so good. I don't have any particular fondness or attachment to it. So far, what I've heard makes it feel like, oh, they captured the spirit of it, so that's cool. So it looks really crazy having this really crisp model walking around in front of a muddy, what appears to be like a 480 by 600 background image. You know?
I wonder, like, maybe this is you know, how many different backgrounds would you say there are in the game? Like, how much ground are you covering?
I mean, I would say like hundreds. Yeah. It's multiple different like camera angles and stuff like that, different rooms and things. Like, it's pretty robust. Like, it covers a great deal of ground, to answer your question.
So I wonder how hard it is to update a sprite or a model that's going to appear in every one of those scenes, which is versus like doing all the different backgrounds. Like, I wonder if it was just a workload kind of decision.
Oh yeah, I mean it probably would have you know done terrible things to the cost of producing this game. If they went back in and tried to, like, it's very possible that they don't have access to the source files from that anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
At the same time, someone remade Final Fantasy VII in the freaking Little Big Planet 3 creators, so true. No one has an excuse for anything in game dev anymore.
I guess. Yes, those thousand monkeys and thousand in their thousand typewriters. they've really raised the bar for all us sinners.
I feel like that is quite possibly the most mixed metaphor we have ever had on this podcast.
So I was on a phone call with a client today. I'm not going to give any details or anything, but one of the pieces of feedback in regards to an animatic, which is like a rough animation that we do before we get like a final animation done, was that one of the characters, and they're like an incidental one-off character, looked like an old lady. And like, it was totally wasn't meant to, you know, read like that at all. They're like, oh, we don't want any old people in our video. We'd rather it be young, like, especially because this character was like representing the company to a certain extent. And so in searching for the word to describe what we were going to do, like, it was the end of the feedback call. Say, all right, we'll revise the script to say X. Well, you know, we'll do this to say Y. I have an incredibly boring job, so this is a terrible story. And I was like, oh, and about that lady. And the notion that I was trying to capture was, we will make her look younger. What do you want to say? In my effort to turn that into a verb, I said we would do to that poor woman.
You would euthanize her.
Yep. Which, so the sentence that came out of my mouth was, and we'll euthanize that old lady. Oh God, Cole, what are you doing? Stop, stop. So I played it off legit. They laughed. It was fine. But it was possibly the dumbest goddamn thing I've ever said.
Oh, if you hadn't said anything, I bet you everyone on that call believed it was intentional.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Kick save by Cole Ross.
From downtown. Yep. Good call, Ben. Yep. So more Grim Fandango. They have some kind of like usability kind of stuff that they've brought in, which I guess is actually like co-opted and borrowed and used with permission from people who've done updating on the emulator side, like with the Grime emulator.
Oh, that's cool.
Or Residue and stuff.
Hey, you did this work for free. Can I just add? Yeah, thank you. Okay,
I think that it was amicable. I think that they actually approached them and said, hey, you guys actually did a really good job with this. I don't know if they got a credit or what, but like, yeah, they did it in a humane way.
That's really smart. Like, yeah. Use it if it works.
Yeah. You know, just get the community involved. So Grim Fandango, if you know anybody here, has anybody else played this game? Because like, I'm worried that nobody else has.
Sadly, no.
I have not.
Ben? I have not either.
Okay. It controlled like Resident Evil, right? So you have this guy and you know, you rotate him and you're walking up to stuff, which is really awkward in a lot of ways for an adventure game where you're trying to do, you know, like fine navigation, right? There's no real action component to it. So it was kind of baffling why they didn't, you know, kind of just make it a point and click, you know, but regardless, they have made the controls more friendly. They actually have a point and click interface on this, which makes the game, like, to my mind, easier, because when you're playing a point and click adventure game, you sweep the screen in order to see what you can interact with. And then it does like a Curse of Monkey Island full throttle thing where when you mouse over something, you get the coin to see, you know, to see like, oh, am I going to look at this? Am I going to pick it up? Am I going to interact with it, as opposed to like cycling through the different verbs that you have? So it's just, it's it's great and it works. It works fantastic. But it also is like, man, this game was stupid when it came out for not doing this because because there's nothing novel about its implementation. It was something that this very same company had done as recently as 3 years before this game came out.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which I understand them wanting to go to 3D. Like, I feel like they gained from doing that. But even still, like, the usability is pretty good. Also, I don't know if the tank controls are still in there, but if you want to use the keyboard, you could actually have, like, directional controls. But I ran into the Silent Hill 2 problem, which was when you move to a different camera angle and you're pressing in a direction, you get discombobulated. You know, and, like, that Alone in the Dark Resident Evil style thing works with the tank control because no matter what, up is always forward. Whereas if you change the camera angle enough, which because this is a noir happens all the time, you will holding up, walk into a screen and then immediately walk out of that screen. And I don't know how you get around that. So
nobody got time for this.
Yeah. So it feels like a concession for console and maybe that it works better there. I can't say, but like the mouse and keyboard, or specifically the point and click controls really seem to work well. And, you know, the story is like unimpeachable. I love the story. The voice acting is fantastic. Like this is like a game that started so many different love affairs in my life, you know, like, or supported or played into them. So like a fascination, like noir and the Mexican afterlife, like, I've liked those things for a long time. I haven't always, you know, liked them as much as I have. This was an early thing that was like, yeah, you know, like all this stuff is really cool. So it's kind of a foundational work in my life, even though I can recognize that it does come up short in a lot of very important ways when you're talking about whether or not a video game is fun to play.
Although, to That's be cool. fair, a lot of the ways you're talking about coming up short kind of sound not exactly that important to the degree that, you know, it seems like the game's about its story, right?
Yeah, but like there's an argument to be made that if the puzzles are bullshit enough, and you know, this very much was a late 90s thing, if the puzzles are bad enough, then you run into a situation where they get in the way of what you're there to do.
Sure, that makes sense. That's reasonable.
So like those frustrations there, and like, yeah, there is some joy in walking around and exploring, and you know, they have fantastic dialogue trees. They're all fully voiced, and you know, like the casting is great. Like more time poking around this world is not necessarily a bad thing, but you know, when you know, kind of like when metal meets metal on this, it really does, you know, kind of like lose out because, you know, you're either frustrated by the fact that you're not proceeding and the game is actively withholding something that you want to see from you.
Sure.
So, but like, you know, I see where you're coming from, and maybe like if you talked with me about this game, you know, earlier than, you know, before I'd played a whole bunch of other adventure games, I would, sure. I would agree with that. But yeah, it's just one of those things where we've come really far in the terms of being comfortable enough to lead with the story in an adventure game, like in a Telltale kind of fashion, or, you know, name any of these other games that we talk about way too much. and that can be fine because people walk into it accepting that that's what it's going to be. And this is like this weird little like estuary between those eras that kind of like was lost to history. And I'm kind of going to wonder if this sells well, or what the, like, you know, or if the public opinion about this is going to turn and people are going to say, oh, right, maybe this is just a historical oddity. And like, is there going to be a bunch of other stuff from this era that just gets jettisoned and not brought forward because people will realize kind of what Grim Fandango is about now that the shine is off the apple and it is no longer completely exclusive.
Yeah, I think people are able to some extent to appreciate something within the context of its time. Like, and if there's one thing we've learned with all the reboots and stuff going on, it's that nostalgia counts for a whole lot. So I wouldn't say it becoming accessible is going to make people turn their backs on it.
Oh no, it's not that it's become too accessible. It's that it's not as accessible as we kind of like take for granted now.
Gotcha.
And that isn't some kind of appeal to, oh, remember when games were real and they weren't made for stupid casual babies? That that is more of a like, we were more comfortable, like we're more comfortable now to let these games be what they're supposed to be. And this is from an era that was decidedly less friendly.
Sure.
Yeah. You sort of get coddled by modern day controls and graphics and yeah.
Yeah. And you know, like it's crazy because this came out in the same week or roughly in the same span of time as the Resident Evil remaster, which I haven't played yet, but I'm incredibly excited to jump into and try. It would be awesome to kind of like have a comparison between the two of these because in a weird kind of way they're trying to accomplish very similar things. Although I would say that Grim Fandango, at least from what I've played and what I know about both of them, leans more towards kind of a preservation angle than, you know, the Resident Evil case, which has a little bit of that to it. Like, oh, GameCubes aren't as readily available anymore. You can't just play those games on Wii anymore, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, from a conservation point of view or a preservation point of view, they both make sense, but there are different things that are done in the translation to modernize them.
Huh. Well, it coming out on PS4 and wherever else has made it infinitely more likely that I will play it.
I'd be really curious to hear what you think, actually.
Yeah, there's still a couple steps there. Is it out on Steam? Out on, or is it coming out on Steam?
It's out on Steam. That's how I played it.
Oh, okay, that's right. From the very beginning, yes. Okay,
yes.
I was going to say there's still the jump of me getting to a PS4 to play it, but yeah, you know, so that it at least is a good thing. Maybe you'll hear more about it in the future. No promises.
I wonder, this would be a pretty good fit for a Vita, actually. I wonder if the smaller screen doesn't help ameliorate that low res kind of issue.
That makes sense.
To a degree. Now I'm very curious. this whole blurred line between the PS4 and the PS Vita, it's really hard to know what is coming out on which system.
Yeah, which is in a way is very nice.
Oh yeah,
because I just want to play a thing on a screen, and I want it to be whatever thing I want and whatever screen is nearest to me.
True. PS Vita, it's out there. It's on there.
Oh sweet.
Yeah.
Nice.
15 smackaroos.
So a question: what is in fact a Grim Fandango?
Fandango is a type of Latin dance. So it is referring to the dance of death and kind of struggle between the powers that are manipulating the fate of souls trying to reach the ninth underworld.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Also, it's just a really cool phrase. Like that is such a wonderful title because it encompasses so much about what you're going to get inside of it. Like
it also just rolls off the tongue.
Yep. Like most Latinate. Titles do or words.
Yeah, that is true.
Man, you could teach classes about how good that title is. Yeah. Any other questions about that?
It's funny. Sorry, just as a random aside, I thought about asking a question about, and maybe we'll do this for a future multiplayer, just your favorite video game title, regardless of like the content or any of that of the game, but just like, what are the coolest titles out there? Maybe that's worth a look now that we're talking about Grim Fandango.
Yeah, no, put it out there. In fact, let's make that next week's multiplayer, unless, like, Apple buys Nintendo or something. you know, like, let's say that.
Cool. All right. Yeah, there you go.
Cool. Yeah, you guys want to button it up?
Sure.
That was level number 91. Once again, I'll remind you, we are on the march to 100. I thought there was going to be more fanfare around that, but okay.
I don't know.
I figured we'd just add some trumpet.
I'm the one who edits. I would have to add the trumpets. Do you know how expensive it is to hire those guys to come in and play fanfares every time you want me to drop trumpets?
I think you just volunteered yourself to insert trumpets.
David, you're talking to David.
If I'm involved, it's going to be all Fandango music.
Oh man! So I don't know what we have in the way of admin here this week. You guys kind of know the drill. There's nothing really too special happening. I will reiterate that it is so important that you tell your friends, especially now as we kind of get up there in numbers. People look at a new podcast or you know look at taking on a new podcast and they say, "Oh, this is episode 90 or so. Will I have to, like, I don't know. I like to think that, like, anybody could jump into this at any time. So if you have people in your life who like video games and you like us, you know, act as matchmaker. That is the way that we grow. No matter how many other efforts we, you know, we put into that, you are still kind of our best friends in that regard. So I guess that's the call to action today is tell a friend. And if you get the time, leave us a rating or review on iTunes.
Yes, please.
Yes, please. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I have been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm still David Moneysmith at MoneySmith777 on Twitter.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And until next time, throw your house at a rock. You know, I've never read the book, so I can't say.
Yeah, that's my understanding, is like that was kind of the thing.
I've only seen the Jackie Chan movie. And I haven't even done that.
Yeah. I've only seen Rat Race. That wasn't even around the world. Did have John Lovitz in it, though.
Lovitz?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, John Lovitz. You know, from SNL. Yeah, John Lovitz and Mr. Bean, Kathy Bates, mm-hmm. Seth Green was in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a real mad world for our generation.
Whoopi Goldberg,
yep, Whoopsie Goldberg, yeah. Yeah, no, it's Mr. Bean, like just straight up Rowan Atkinson being Mr. Bean.
Mm-hmm. That's all he played. That's like his thing.
I know, right?
How you write that? Just like insert Mr. Bean scene.
Yeah,
go. Yeah. I feel like it's kind of the inverse like Jackie Chan situation, by which I mean like Jackie Chan. No matter what character he's playing, every character he plays is Jackie Chan. Whereas this is no, you know, regardless of the fact that he presumably has an actual identity, he is just always going to be Mr. Bean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and just you know, that's the stage direction. He beans. Yeah. Except this time he has a he's a Mr. Bean with narcolepsy, if I recall correctly.
That's true.
Yeah. It was a regular King of the Hill reunion because you had Breckenmeyer and Kathy and Jimmy in there. You know? Yeah.
Who did Breckenmeyer do on King of the Hill?
He was Joseph.
Joseph I'm getting Kribble? The idea I need to actually watch King of the Hill because the more and more people I talk to, that is like a thing that they love.
Yeah. It's a really good show.
So, guys, I'm staring. There's a banner ad on Joystick for a key mouse, which is a keyboard and a mouse. And it's just a mouse with like all the buttons of a keyboard on it, only it seems like there's two mice. One for your right-hand side of the keyboard and one for your left-hand side of the keyboard. I'm trying to decide whether or not to click on this right now.
By mice, do you mean like touchpad?
Yeah, no, like an actual mouse that you would roll around on the desk with your hand.
That is weird. So is it a bundle?
He's actually referring to you get a box with two small rodents in it.
It's factory seconds. We did a really bad job of sealing these boxes. The grain silent next door to our warehouse fell over, and all the rats just fled in here.